Algar Productions.
This is the Post-Atomic Horror, the most comprehensive Star Trek podcast ever produced. Your hosts are Ron Algar Watt and Maggie Robotham. Episode 491, The Best Exotic Nanite Hotel, and A Farewell to Farms.
Hi, friends. Welcome to the Post-Atomic Horror. I'm Al.
I'm Maggie, and I'm sad.
Sad is one word for it.
Sad, disappointed,
angry,
annoyed.
Yeah.
Blinded by rage.
I was going to say, like, going through your notes, like, you seem more angry than sad.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not mad, I'm disappointed, but also I'm mad.
Mm-hmm.
It's all
of those. Listen, we're like halfway through season five. It's like...
Yeah, we're in the home stretch runner here.
When does it get good again?
Mm-hmm. There's six episodes left.
Uh-huh. Surely each one of these will be a masterpiece.
Well, I know one of them is the one everyone was talking about that Garak and Bashir show up in. So
that's cool. Yeah.
We'll like that. Beyond that, there were things I liked about one of these episodes. Unfortunately, it wasn't the one that it was my job to summarize, unfortunately. But let me tell you about the best exotic nanite hotel, which last week we both were like, oh yeah, that's Wes Anderson. No, it's not actually.
Really?
It sure feels like one of his.
Yeah, it does. Who is it?
I had this up and I lost it. Best exotic Marigold.
Let's see
hotel.
Here. It says
it's British.
It's Wenderson.
It's directed by John Madden. I assume not the football commentator / old football coach.
It's probably the football guy who made.
Well, you can see here the Marigold Hotel is.
That's why Best Exotic Marigold Hotel releases every year, so they can update the stats.
Yes, the all Marigold team, of course.
Uh-huh, yeah.
Also, weird side note, apparently Nick Cage is playing John Madden in an upcoming movie.
Sure, why not? That might as well happen.
Yeah, I don't know why. Whatever. All right, here we go. The Cerritos has been sent to the Cosmic Duchess, an interstellar cruise ship where everything looks like it could be on a cruise ship from 2025. And all right, I know. I need to get over this whole the future doesn't look like the future thing, don't I? The Duchess has been overrun by nanites. You know, like from that TNG episode? This is something I will never get over. So they send an away team consisting of Rutherford, Tendi, Talin, Mariner, and Mariner's Andorian girlfriend, Jennifer. Oh, right, because Mariner is a bisexual icon, according to Paramount's Pride-themed social media post. I mean, she had a girlfriend in two of the previous 42 episodes, and now it's three! Except that they actually broke up months ago, and Mariner never actually told Jennifer this because she's bad at relationships and feelings and being even the most superficially decent human being. Also, their couple name is Beckifer, because apparently everyone lives in Tumblr circa 2013, and seriously, I just need to get over this because they're not going to stop doing it. Jennifer is transferring off the Cerritos soon, so Mariner just needs to keep pretending they're together for this one final mission, and if you're thinking that hilarity then ensues... I guess you've never seen an episode of this show before? Meanwhile, Ransom and Billups take Boimler on what they describe as a side quest to a ski resort right out of an 80s teen movie where they address each other as bro and bra. I am never going to get over this! Why are any of these shows set in the future if you're just going to make all the situations and characters indistinguishable from a show set in modern times? You people clearly love Star Trek, as evidenced by Boimler directly referencing the TNG episode Galaxy's Child by name. Why can't you do the one thing everyone agrees Star Trek actually does and be in the goddamn future? Anyway, then they find the missing admiral they were looking for, who has gone AWOL like in Heart of Darkness / Apocalypse Now, and okay, this is actually not a bad reference, because I read early rumors of at least three different Trek movies being an adaptation of Heart of Darkness, and it never really happened. It's up there with Gene's dumb JFK assassination idea. The Admiral left Starfleet because he's being ordered to milk space whales, leading to Boimler's hilarious Galaxy's Child name check, and refers to himself as an interstellar dairy farmer. And friends, all it would have taken for the show to completely win me back after 4+ seasons of substandard half-assery was for Boimler to reply with, "How appropriate, you fight like an interstellar cow." Naturally, he did not do this.
Because we do not live in a good or pure universe.
Nope, not at all. This was very... Everything about this one was particularly phoned in, I thought.
Oof-a-doof, this was bad.
Yeah, it really was.
Just, god damn.
Well, the thing that bothers both of us is that sitcom thing of, like, people not talking about, like, the simple problems that could solve the thing. And, like, both plots were essentially that, because... The Mariner one was obviously that with, like, oh, I didn't tell my girlfriend we broke up. Like, that was the Seinfeld thing, man.
Yeah.
I never told her we broke up. And then the Boimler thing, I didn't really mention this, but he runs into terrible name haver, Jet Manhaver.
Ugh.
Yeah. Who, like, says that the entire point of taking junior officers on away missions is because they're trying to, like... they're like cannon fodder.
They're trying to redshirt him.
Yeah, and so Boimler spends the entire episode saying, oh, you're not going to kill me, and then falling off of things.
He literally falls off of a mountain.
Yeah, they do the wahoo-hoo-hoo-y thing, which could be funny if it wasn't not funny.
Mm-hmm.
But there you go.
Uh-huh. Ugh.
Yeah.
Here's the thing, and this is my bad thing, because this is the main thrust of the episode. Mm-hmm. And it's just
thrust.
God, Mariner, it just keeps getting more and more unlikable. Like, I realize that this series is supposed to be about her working through her shit, but, like, we're 5 seasons into a 5-season series, and thank God. And, like, I like her significantly less than when we started. This is not fun. Yeah. It's just annoying. Like, I am literally at the point where I like Boimler more than her, and if you'll recall, he was my bad thing for the entirety of season 1.5. But, like, he has gone through actual growth over the course of the series. He is a different character than when we started. He is a better character. He is a more likable character. And do you know how mad it makes me to say that? It makes me so fucking mad.
Yeah, like, all of our principal characters have gone through some form of arc and character growth. You're right. Like Rutherford learned about his past and kind of changed a few things based on that. And, Tendi had her whole recent thing where she had to go back home and sort of resolve the fact that she's got assassin training, but she really wants to be in Starfleet. And Boimler is actually growing into a half-assed okay officer from time to time. I'll agree with you there. But, like, Mariner just doing the same shit she did on day one.
And, like, they really sort of lean into the assholification of that character. They're like, we think she's funnier when she's just an awful person. And, like...
there's a way to do that.
There, like, is definitely a way to do that, but it's hard to hang your Star Trek show on that.
Well, I think part of the problem is that she and Boimler are sort of the co-leads, and then, Tendi and Rutherford are sort of the secondary leads, and now Talin, I would say.
Yes.
But even if you say all 4 of them are main characters, either way, she's one of the main characters. And that's where, whereas, like, if you had a superficial character in the background like that, like Dr. Ta'ana being kind of a jerk is okay because you don't have to spend every single moment on screen with her.
Also, God, do you know how mad it makes me that I cannot, that I fucking hate this black female bisexual character? You know how mad that makes me?
This is part of why I resisted saying I didn't like her for a while, because, okay, am I being a dick about this? Is this some unchecked casual racism? And it's maybe there's some of that in there I'm not aware of, but
I hope not. But, like, I'm trying.
But if you just showed me this script, I would probably feel the same way.
Mm-hmm.
Like, without knowing what the character looked like.
Ugh.
Yeah. Not great.
That's just, God, it makes me so mad. And it makes me so mad that it makes me mad, you know?
Yeah. Well, it's because we have to do this. Like, we have signed up to do this, and we have to sort of analyze each thing. Whereas you could switch it off if you were just doing this for fun or not fun. You know what I mean? So,
but this is the rope we have lashed ourselves to.
Well, look, we're almost done, and then we're going to do Prodigy, which completely unknown quantity. I saw one of those and remember about one thing, and even if it's bad, it didn't last very long. So, and then we know Strange New Worlds is pretty good. So,
I'm looking forward to Strange New Worlds, which will be around for a little bit longer.
A little bit. They announced their final season is going to be short. So,
so 5 episodes.
Okay. Yeah, whatever.
I'm hoping for the announcement that Strange New World spins off into just, we remade the original series.
I don't want that. They already did assume, that. They were the Abrams movies.
I got to assume that's where all of these characters, like, from the original series are going, you know? Like,
I don't think
we'll make this guy the lead, you know?
I think they're just bridging into that. I think they're just, like we're, because they just introduced Scotty at the end of season two or three or whatever it was, and, like, I think they're just going to gradually, like, probably Sulu will show up and probably, like, Rand, and, you know, like, we're just going to gradually build that crew, so. And then you, like, the last episode is probably right before The Cage, I would guess.
Mm-hmm.
Or maybe we'll get to watch The Cage again.
Yeah, Al, if the last five episodes of that show turns out to be just a remake of The Cage, like, you know what? We earned it.
Well, and also they did that kind of on Disco already, or at least came back to that.
Oh, yeah.
So, you know. And that was not terribly long after we, as a joke, revisited The Cage anyway.
Mm-hmm.
So we had it fresh in our heads and we kind of recognized more of the callbacks than we would have.
Yeah.
All right. My bad thing. So nanites are not tiny robots anymore. They're just one singular blob that gets bigger as it absorbs things, which Memory Alpha pointed out is like the Katamari game, which I know nothing about. But
I hear it's very good, and I like the song that comes from it.
Yeah, I've seen screenshots of it that make it look absolutely fucking bonkers, and I appreciate that.
Yep.
But it's like, I know gray goo. I've read a lot of sci-fi stories about gray goo. I know what it is. It's just nanites have never taken that form before. In the Next Gen episode where, like, Wesley used some and they went nuts, they were invisible because they're tiny.
Yeah.
And all the nanobots that Seven had that were Borg related, same thing. Like, the gray goo thing comes from nowhere. Like, when did this happen? And it's just so they can basically do a blob episode. Like,
yeah, pretty much.
There's nothing nanite-like about them. Like, there's no intelligence in there that they're communicating with. It's just a blob.
Yeah, it's just a blob. Like, doing a Grey Goo thing would actually be pretty interesting.
That's fine.
That is a deeply terrifying sci-fi concept that I actually love.
Yeah. Yeah, it's good. I just read one this week about a similar concept, but it was organic, where it was they had created one of those enzymes that eats pollution and farts out oxygen, and that basically became gray goo. And that's good.
That is very cool. I also, so there was, I think you gave me this. There was a like script that the guy on Red, the one of the creators of Red Dwarf, left. He came back to do like a five-page. Rob Grant. He came back to do a five-page. This is how I'm ending the series.
Yep. Yeah, there was
story
Grey Goo
that was
that.
About Grey Goo. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Very depressing end of those characters, but
well, you know, that's always been an undercurrent of that show.
Oh, absolutely.
But, like I don't mind a Grey Goo story, but the whole thing with nanites is they are tiny, intelligent robots that you can communicate with, and they wanted to do a mindless lumbering monster thing instead, which is also fine. Like, that's a tried and true story, but it's like, you said nanites, so where's the intelligence in there?
Yeah,
it felt like they didn't know what they were doing, and they kept calling it a glumpus, which, okay, fine.
That's just Rutherford going, I'm calling it a glumpus, and everyone going, all right.
Well, what I like is Talyn saying, I am not calling it that. And then later in the episode, she's like, the Glumpus is approaching. Because that's Talyn. She's always like, I am not part of these weird non-Vulcan things you people do. And then a couple of beats later, she's always just joining in.
Yep. It's like, but also, like, the bit at the beginning of this episode where they're like, Tandy, we're so glad you're back. And she goes, yes. The amount of screaming has significantly increased on the ship, but I am still pleased with your company.
Despite the increase in cheering, I wrote this down.
That's it. God, what a great line.
Despite the increase in cheering, your presence is a comfort.
Yep.
That's how I feel about most people I know, in fact.
Yeah, I can apply that to a lot of people I love in this world.
Yeah, absolutely. Two people I live with, in fact.
Yeah. Yep. Hooray.
My good thing, I absolutely agree with your bad thing. Mariner just continuing to make terrible choices, and and them embracing the idea that she's a shitty sitcom character instead of a, like, you could do both. You could have her be a type of sitcom slash comedy character without sacrificing any kind of character growth. But yeah, that's I hate that. She had a good line, is all.
Yes.
Which was the so-called Glumpus is takes the form of this multi-sided. It looks like D&D dice. And,
yes.
And Mariner goes, "Oh no, it's an," and then she quickly counts the sides. Icosahedron.
That was very good. Yes.
Which that could have been Tendi. That could have been Rutherford. It didn't, like, honestly, Mariner, like, I think Mariner doing it made it funnier because she's supposed to be sort of the man of action. And like her doing the math joke was unexpected. That made it a little extra funny to me.
Did she count on her fingers too?
I don't think so. I think she was pointing at the sides to count them.
That's one, two, three, four, five.
Yeah.
That's a great joke.
Yeah. But also an indication like, oh, she's not as dumb as she pretends to be.
Mm-hmm.
But that's good.
Yeah. Yep.
What was your good thing?
I don't know. Little metal. I like the look of the little metal nanite monster when it was sliding around.
Yeah, the thing is, again, as an antagonist, I didn't hate the thing. I just didn't understand calling it nanite. But yeah, you're right. It was good. And they made it look sort of like Mercury, which was cool.
Mm-hmm. There's a when they're trying to catch it, there's the Star Trek version of a box on a stick, which is famously one of my favorite stupid jokes ever.
The trap with the box with a little bit of bait and a stick holding.
Yes. Yeah. Uh-huh. Yeah. They do. They update it so that it's a TNG style box, which we've seen numerous times on top of a laser stick because it's the future.
Right.
And I'm like, that's great. Good joke.
I did not care for that joke, but I see why you did. And also, as an appreciator of old hacky comedy bits, I get it. That one doesn't do it for me, but.
Yep. Box on a stick. Box on a stick has been introduced in so many goddamn jokes I've written over the years.
No, I know. I know. Mm-hmm. Look, you know I like me a pie in the face and a pantomime horse and a, I'm so poor that I have to wear a barrel.
As moths stream out of my pockets.
That's one of the funniest jokes you ever wrote was about Mothman. Watch out for me in your wallet when you're out of money. Jesus Christ, I laughed so hard at that.
We ever get to do a live show again, we're doing a box on a stick gag.
Okay, that's fine.
We'll put a not episode of Lower Decks under it.
A what?
A not episode of Lower Decks under it.
What does that mean?
It means, there's not an episode of Lower Decks under this box. I'll just go under it.
I found that with most boxes. Also, you could just trap literally everyone we know and put an episode of Lower Decks because, we're the only people who see the Emperor as naked here.
Mm-hmm. I'm naked, yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Execute Order 69.
The attack on my life has left my genitals twisted and deformed.
Quite operational. There were, as usual, tedious fucking TNG. Like, they're talking about this resort, and they're like, they have Dixon Hill slot machines. Like, Dixon Hill is a specific thing from the past that Picard was into. It feels like... It feels like it's lost to the mists of history, except that Picard kind of likes it, you know? And no, everyone knows what it is. Okay. Terrible. We got to see Gallimites, like Captain Baudet with the transparent skulls.
I kind of actually like the way those guys looked, you know?
I have mixed feelings about this. I think I liked how they looked too, but it's one of those... You didn't need to show that. I always liked that being one of the things Dax always described him and you never got to see him.
Yep.
It's like, I'm amazed when we went to DS9 that the show didn't make Morn talk.
Yeah, seriously, now that you mention it.
It's that kind of a joke where it's like, okay, yeah, I understand, but also, you couldn't just leave that alone.
I get, like, fucking have him just turn to the camera and go, "You guys heard about Captain Picard? He's great."
Mm-hmm.
Surely the best character.
Mm-hmm. What else?
That did lead to the part of this I actually like, where one of the Gallimites is like a, it's basically, what the hell is his name? The beach singer guy.
The beach singer guy?
Cheeseburger in Paradise. What the fuck's his name?
Jimmy Buffett?
Jimmy Buffett, yeah.
Mm-hmm.
He's apparently the Jimmy Buffett of space, and Tallinn is a huge fan of his. Who saves the day by getting to play on his whatever that the fucking air zither thing that she gets to use is.
Mm-hmm. No, that was good. I like that. I like
that part of the episode.
And if he's Jimmy Buffett, that makes her a parrot head, I guess.
Yeah, basically.
That's what they call those things.
Right? They have a moment at the end where she's like, "I love your music," and he's like, "I love your approach to logic." I'm like,
"Yeah,
oh,
I study
I love both
Vulcan."
Of you.
Yep, that was very good.
I study and Vulcan then, logic to be chill. I'm like, yeah, good.
Okay, except for the word chill. Like, yeah, all right.
Mm-hmm.
I like that Tendi got an autographed a copy of his album or whatever. And
yeah.
Tallinn was like, "This has been defaced," and she's like, "No, it's got sentimental value. I'll throw it away. No, I will keep it in my quarters."
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Because once again, she protests, but then she gives in.
Yep. It's like that bit in Bob's Burgers where Tina's like, "Louise, I made you this friendship bracelet. Oh, great. I hate it. All right, I'll throw it away. No, I love it. I'm going to wear it forever."
Mm-hmm. Just let her do what she wants.
Yeah. Lynn. Lynn, just let her do it.
Mm-hmm.
A much better cartoon.
Well, yes, of course. what else? Oh, so this was sort of your superficial bad thing. There was a ship trapped in the goo, which I actually liked. That was a great sort of course, there's some Star Trek shit going on around them. Like all this time, there's been a starship shrunk down and trapped in that universe, which that was good. But unfortunately, the ship was, it's your bad thing, so.
Seriously, the Endeavor? Really? This show takes everything from me.
Well, the thing is, I chose that name because it was one of the space shuttles and it hadn't really been used in Star Trek at all, which I was stunned by. Like, it's a major name for a spaceship that they hadn't used. And so I figured someday some Star Trek thing would actually use it. And so they did. I didn't even mind it here. Plus, you give me 5 minutes and tell me what the star dates were and I could work out like an explanation for that. Like, oh, no, ours was the Endeavor C or something.
Sure.
I think this takes place before our ship left for Andromeda. Yeah. So there you go.
It's mostly just like, really?
Yeah, I know. I know.
And you classified it. You get to decide what type of ship it is.
Oh, yeah. They made it one of the what Voyager is.
Yeah, I can never remember what Voyager. I just call it a Voyager class because
Intrepid.
You know, an Intrepid. There you go.
I remember that because there is a car called the Dodge Intrepid. I'm like, you guys just named that after a car, huh?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, the Corvette class. Okay. The Trans Am class.
Uh-huh.
All right.
Get the Pinto class.
Yeah, oh no. Shields up.
Quick, Marty, hop into my DeLorean class spaceship.
Here come the Packlins and their Cybertruck class.
Oh, God.
Yep.
Those are very hard to jump over things.
Mm-hmm. All right. Anything else?
Let me take a quick look at my notes here. I kind of doubt it.
All right.
No.
All right. Well, you want to tell us about a farewell to farms then?
All right. So we open on Kronos with Ma'ar. I think that's the pronunciation. The disgraced Klingon captain from last season who taught Mariner to give a care once again. He's been dishonored, Worf style, and has returned to his family bloodworm vineyard to make blood wine. Apparently, making wine is the only thing you can do in Star Trek that isn't, one, being in Starfleet, two, being a weird con artist that sells tribbles and or sex droids, or three, some kind of chef. Speaking of chefs, on the Cerritos, Dr. Polly Wants a Cracker F. Tompkins is visited by some delegates from his stupid bird planet who make food jokes for slightly less than half of the episodes. Listeners, I was so annoyed I almost bit through my own teeth. Back on Kronos, Ma'ar meets up with Mariner and Boimler, who want to help him get his ship back because Mariner has decided something and, as always, refuses to listen to anybody else. The two of them, plus Ma'ar's brother, go through a series of Klingon rituals to get Ma'ar's honor back, which include pain sticks, targ wrestling, and fierce combat with falling barrels. Eventually, Boimler uses Klingon rules lawyering to get Ma'ar's captain back, and also Ma'ar murders the Klingon guy who was mean to him, so everything basically works out great. Back in the bird plot line, I keep checking to see how many episodes of this show I have to watch anymore before it's finally over, and I am disgusted to learn that A Farewell to Farms was in fact not episode 6.
Nope. We just did the two season premiere episodes last week. So.
Well, you can understand my problems here.
Oh, I absolutely can.
Oh, boy.
Yeah. Okay, go ahead.
About half of this was fine.
I liked the Klingon stuff weirdly. Like, I famously am the one who gets bored by Klingon stuff. I was telling you before the show, maybe the secret is to put it in a cartoon because I actually kind of enjoyed it. And
that makes a lot of sense.
And this is kind of your good thing, yeah?
Mm. The Klingon stuff, like, the Klingon stuff, the backgrounds, the Targs, the opening of this, which, like, we both talked about, I have no idea what it's supposed to be referencing, but, like...
No, it was weirdly cinematic, and there was a very specific style to the shots and the transitions and the titles. Like, it was referencing something, and good job, I didn't immediately know what it was.
Yeah.
And
so,
Memory
shrug.
Alpha didn't say either. What I liked is we've been on Kronos once or twice, but always in like the seats of power, like the big palaces and shit. But like seeing how regular ass farmers live on one of the main planets in Star Trek was kind of a cool, like, oh, we get to see working class people on one of the main Star Trek planets. That's cool.
Yeah, it's neat, you know, like just sort of
spreading out.
It's a good
way to learn about a culture.
We've talked a lot about, like, how they, like, as they've slowly introduced other aspects of Klingons that aren't just the warriors. I always go back to the Klingon lawyer who was, like, such a cool idea, you know?
Yeah, he saw law as a way of being a warrior, but he was still a very different kind of guy.
Yeah, yeah. So we get this guy who's, like, living on his parents' farm and, you know, like, Targ wrestling and stuff. And it's all... it's all very Klingon, like it all works, like none of it feels stupid or out of place for these, like, this race that's been around since the original series. And
yeah, and we've heard about Bloodwine since probably one of Worf's first appearances, and so that's a good, like, well, where does that come from? Obviously someone needs to make that, tease that out a little bit, and like they're not just picking grapes, they're picking something alive because it's Bloodwine, it has to be blood. Like okay, I get it, that's cool.
Yeah. It all works in a way I find very satisfying.
Yeah, and it was still, they still got some good gags out of, like, like, this is a farm, and, you know, farmer jokes, which are one of the classic forms of comedy. Like,
oh yeah,
farmer jokes. You know, like, I got a pitchfork and I'm waving my fist at you and stomping on my hat and all, you know, all that. That being said,
brother, shake harder.
Well, yeah. That being said, my bad thing was actually his brother, Melor's, the whole character. Like,
sure.
Not the way he was written, but the voice, which, by the way, Sam Witwer did the voice. He's the guy who stood in for Captain Kirk in those shorts that we talked about. He's done a million voices in video games. Like, he's a prominent voice actor, and he can do good stuff. But he did the Klingon guy as a wrestler, brother, and I fucking hated it. He sounded like fucking Hulk Hogan. I did not care for that. And he wore overalls with one strap and no shirt underneath, like a character from Hee-Haw. Like, it just... okay. I actually liked the character, but some of the visual and voice choices could have been better.
That's fair. I thought he was very well written. I love the... He spends the entire episode just sort of ribbing on his brother in a very brother way.
Well, his brother was a captain. He was an important man, and he came back humbled to the farm, and his brother's like, oh, you're not captain anymore. You can't boss me around.
Douche.
Which is very... You're right. That is a very sibling way to be.
Hey, Ma'ar. Former captain says what? What? Two for fletching.
How's that honor tasting? Oh, you don't have any? Oh.
Slug bug. Oh, come on.
Of course, we got an Experience Beige reference, which you probably loved, and
I did not. Here's the thing. I enjoyed it is a very quick Experience Beige, and then someone else goes, you Experience Beige. And I had the wonderful sensation of going, ha! Oh.
But it was like, it's a pretty obscure pull. Like, I know it because you and Flonk and a couple of other our friends would not shut up about it. But I don't think your average Star Trek fan is like super steeped in that.
Yeah.
It's the old VHS game.
Yeah, exactly. I got to assume most Star Trek fans don't stand around going, have you experienced beige?
Mm-hmm.
If you experience beige, please consult a doctor.
Mm. I mean, you don't need to know about the beige that I've experienced, thanks.
Yeah, my beige is none of your beigeness.
Terrible. I was just going with beige. Sounds like BJ, but like...
It sure does. Beige and the bear.
Mm-hmm. Cooter and the bear.
Mm-hmm. That bear gave a hell of a beige.
So my good
thing... And so on in that fashion.
And so on in that fashion. The late, great, little creepy George Lowe insisted he knew Cooter and the bear.
Really?
Oh, yeah. I used to know those guys. They're characters we made up, George. No, sure. I met Cooter. Uh-huh. Sure you did.
Mother, remember when we met Cooter?
Mm-hmm. So my good thing for this
May
episode...
May he rest in peace.
Yes. May he rest in his Buick. I kind of liked Boimler getting into the Klingon stuff. Like, he was super into it. Like, usually I find his fanboyishness tedious, but it kind of worked here. Like, what it reminded me of, this is completely personal. It reminded me of something I do, which, usually he's a coward, and that's been tedious from day one. But I am a generally calm and courteous driver, but when I hit the city limits of New York City, I go fucking bonkers. And in a way where I'm not actually mad, I'm just enjoying it and sort of playing a character and getting into it. Like, hey, fuck stick, you ran the red light, you know, like just, you know, whatever. Cutting off cabs and so forth.
Oh my God, that's so funny.
It's every single time. Like, because I used to live on the East Coast and I'd go up to New York a couple times a year at least.
Mm-hmm.
And I'd always drive there and I enjoyed it. Like, just fighting the traffic. Because, again, I don't live there. It's just a tourist experience for me. And it was kind of fun. And it reminded me a bit of that, where he's like super getting in. Yeah, hit me with the pain stick. It's great. Like, usually he'd run away from, I don't know, like a hypo spray for a vaccination or something. Mm. Like, oh no, it's going to hurt. But here he's like, nope. I'm on Kronos. I will take the pain stick. Like,
he's the first guy to attack the giant Targ they have to fight, and it's like, yeah, all right, you're on vacation, sure, yeah.
And he doesn't really even say. He might have had one line, but the whole shtick isn't just like Worf, so that made it better. It's just, no, these are Klingons. They are a main culture that we interact with, and I'm into it. Like, it's a bit cringy in that. It's also a bit like a white dude going to Japan kind of thing.
Mm.
You know what I mean? Absolutely. I am exactly like you. I have read some manga, so I am exactly like you. Yes, sure. Uh-huh.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know.
Japan's favorite visitors. Oh, good.
Yep. But, you know, it's still, like, it works for the character. It was funny, and it didn't take me out of the episode, and it continued to make him a little more interesting to me.
Yeah.
So, and I didn't even dislike, oh, go ahead.
Oh, just again, like, the character has really become a lot more interesting to me, and I never thought I would say that, so hats off to you.
I still much prefer when they cut over to the other characters, but...
Oh, absolutely, like,
but if he's separated from the group, I'm not like, oh, God, don't make me watch Boimler. It's like, all right, what are they doing?
No, it's absolutely two characters fighting for last place, but, like, you know...
No, I don't think they're fighting for it anymore.
Not anymore.
I think we have a winner.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
But I also didn't, like you pointed this out in your summary, I didn't hate Mariner's usual won't let it go thing here because that episode's still pretty fresh in my mind when the Klingon guy on that planet was like,
yes.
You are a warrior. What the fuck are you doing? Like step up. And she's just giving that back to him and like, yeah, all right. I see why she's being like this. And at one point, he's like, but I don't even want to do it anymore.
Mm-hmm. I absolutely laughed at... No, you have to because of the human ritual of whatever. They feed you to a bear.
Mm-hmm.
Right, Boimler? Boimler. Hmm? Oh, yeah. The feed you to a bear. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that was good.
Mm-hmm. You would have better luck with the bear.
Mm-hmm. What about Cooter?
I knew that guy. No, you didn't. We invented him.
I think Flonk invented him, actually, and we just ran with it.
Why are Ma'ar and George Lowe hanging out this week?
Well, I went to Stomacore. That's just...
I hope he did.
Mm-hmm.
Here I am on the barge of the dead.
You're not Feklar. You're Moltar. Yeah, that's right, buddy. All right.
What are you doing in Rigel 4?
Kicking it. We are doing our best to avoid the secondary plot of this episode.
Oh, God.
Because, boy, one of the worst things they've done of a show that where that's a hotly contested title?
Absolutely. Like, look, I just talked about my least favorite character, but my real least favorite character in the entirety of this show.
Well, your least favorite character in terms of characters you have to spend some time with every episode. This guy gets shuffled into the background a lot and you never see him.
Yeah, exactly. Like, I've been annoyed about this guy since the first time he showed up in what I had hoped at the time was a one-off.
And look, this is a tremendous waste of a talent that you and I both revere as one of the great voices of modern comedy.
Mm-hmm.
But, all right, let's get into it. This is your bad thing.
All right, good. Oh, good. An entire fucking episode about Polly F. Tompkins and his stupid bird people.
I need to stop you there because we have been trying to think of a good pun name for him and you fucking nailed it finally. So at least good job there. Polly F. Tompkins is so good. Please continue.
Thank you. Thank you. I added the wants a cracker in the...
No, that's good. That was good.
The summary to hit it home because like...
Mm-hmm. It's a very good joke.
Good. Great. Thank you. More of this, please. Like... Mm-hmm. I hate the whole thing is that, like, these two bird people delegates or whatever come on the ship and, like, they're just assholes and, like...
Well, their whole culture is being foodies. That's it.
Yeah.
That's the entire planet, an entire species evolved to be food critics, and they show up to criticize his food.
Yeah,
that's it.
This is the thing, because when he first showed up, I'm like, all right, that's his deal or whatever.
Yeah, his weird quirk, yeah.
Yeah, but fine, you know? And then, like, as the series goes on, it's like, no, this is his entire culture. And I'm like, that's stupid.
Oh, go ahead.
Well, we get into the whole, you'll go to the taste prison where butter is not allowed. And you'll receive an amuse-bouche, as is customary to anyone who arrives on our planet. And I'm just banging my head against a wall.
They mentioned the great seating chart at one point.
Mm-hmm.
Just... So I think what they're trying to do is like a meta joke of like, we said the Ferengi are greedy and then we made their whole culture about being greedy. Like this is Star Trek, right? And like, yes, it kind of works there, but it's also stupid.
Mm-hmm.
Like DS9 worked 7 seasons to make all that Ferengi shit work. Like,
and I mean,
the great comptroller in the sky is such a dumb thing. And by the end, Quark would say that and be like, oh, shit, he really believes in this, doesn't he?
Yeah. And like it all works in a way that we talked about this back when we did the Ferengi episode a couple weeks back, and just like the way it all ties together in a way that I find very satisfying. You know, like you take the stupid stuff and the jokes and you make it work.
Well, one, I can see how it works internally, like as a culture, I get it because I live there now.
Oh, like, God, you ain't kidding.
That's it. It's just commentary on. As how we live now, but a planet full of food critics? What is that?
How?
It's all very dumb.
Also, their prison is a birdcage.
Uh-huh.
Which I had the reaction, their prison is a birdcage. That's stupid.
I get it. It's not funny, but I get it.
This is also the episode where I learned that their race is called the Cloacans, which also you can just shoot me in the head. Thanks.
No, you don't. We're in this till the end.
Boy.
Yeah, it was dumb. At one point, he's preparing his he's very sitcom. Like, I've got to impress the boss so I can make vice president. And like, he's got he's got Tendi and Rutherford helping him. And they're like, "Yes, Dr. Chef." And, like, they're doing one of those cooking shows, I guess.
Oh, yeah.
Which I've never watched any of those, but I've heard references to them. So you know.
Yeah, I guess that's a thing. I don't really care about cooking shows.
No, me neither. And then it turns out. They were just lying, and they have no taste buds.
get it? See, it's just...
Yeah, it's terrible.
This is a great joke.
Yep.
Great joke. For everybody.
No. Good joke. Everybody laugh.
Everybody had a great time, and it was the best joke.
Gotta have a good time tonight.
Gonna have a real good time. No, this is the rest of the episode now.
Their shoes broke and they sneezed themselves into cones.
God, if only.
What else?
I have, let's see here. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 13.
I noticed your notes stopped. Because I'm like, oh, Maggie's notes stop at this plot point, which means I must be near the end. And there was still like 10 minutes left. I'm like, what the fuck, Maggie?
Mm-hmm. Usually I was having a real bad time.
I usually follow your notes as kind of a map and like, okay, that's good. That means it ends now. Nope. Oh, and to trick them, to prove that they don't have any taste buds, he feeds them literal shit.
Yeah, that was also hilarious.
And they're like, this tastes like shit. Oh, it is shit.
hilarious, we made you eat actual shit joke. Replicated shit, but still.
Mm-hmm.
This shit came from no one.
Yep. All right. Anything else?
I don't think so.
I think that's about all. I'm going through my notes.
Yeah, let me look at your notes for anything. Hello, Lord. Anything here?
No, probably not. I've already stripped every joke I could think of out of it.
They certainly didn't.
No, of course not. Mm-hmm. All right. Well, I guess that's all for this time. Next week, we will be a couple weeks ago, I was disappointed that they blew their Starbase 80 wad after talking about it the entire series, but they are actually doing a whole episode about it. It's called Starbase 80? Exclamation point. I had to double check that this wasn't a typo of Gods and Angles.
Yes.
Not Angels, Angles.
No. All right.
There was a fan film called Of Gods and Angels, and I thought they were referencing that, and maybe they are.
Yeah, all right.
And
Was that the one we watched?
No.
Okay.
No. I like some of those fan films. I don't really like them, but I respect them. I think they got more heart than this show.
That you respect the hustle.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, we did a fan thing for 2 and a bit seasons. Yeah. Like,
absolutely.
Anyway, I believe Amanda will be joining us for that. I gotta double check, but there's only 3 left, and she said she'll come on for one, and basically, it comes down to, do I feel like watching the show earlier in the week to accommodate her, or do I want to put it off to the last minute? So we'll see. As ever, if you want to write to us, we're nearly done and we're doing a supplemental. It is postatomichorror@gmail.com. If you got here from the Patreon, thank you. If not, you can still get episodes ahead of time. By the time you regular listeners hear this, we'll be well into Prodigy and you can hear those. It is patreon.com/Algar. And I think that's all for this time.
Yeah. See you, folks.
The Postatomic Horror Podcast is a co-production of Maggie Robotham and Ron Algar Watt. Copyright 2025. Please don't sue us. We're just doing this for fun.